prices are on the rise.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, hello, this is the Marketplace Midday Update for Thursday, the 14th of March. And today the government said that prices at the producer level rose by 0.7% last month. That's the most in 5 months. So should we be worried about inflation? Diane Swonk is chief economist with Mesirow Financial, and she's with us now from Chicago to discuss. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, so how big of an uptick is this in the producer price index?
Well, it's certainly not insignificant. We all saw it in prices at the pump, and that'll show up for the consumer as well. The good news is it's transitory. We've already seen prices at the pump come off the highs we saw in February, and there's not been a lot of spillover inflation or pipeline inflation to feed sort of any kind of flare-up in inflation anytime soon.
So other than the gas pump, consumers are not going to feel this too much.
Exactly. And what we've actually seen is a lot of discounting for consumers, particularly in the apparel sector. So you're going to continue to see very benign inflation for consumers. The good news is conditions are improving. The better news for consumers is they're improving not too fast to flare inflation.
Now, as we see this improvement in the job market, and we got some good numbers on that this morning, in the stock market, obviously, in the housing market, aren't we going to see inflation at some point tick up more than this?
No doubt we will see it at some point tick up more meaningful and have to be fought at some point in time, but the question is when. And when you've got the labor market with as much slack and overhang, particularly of workers that have given up and can rejoin the labor force, that's a mitigating factor. It will help to regulate inflation for at least the next year, if not longer, and that's why the Fed's not overly concerned of inflation at the moment. But down the road, they certainly will be.
Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
Well, today is a big day for Samsung, which is revealing its new smartphone. The Galaxy S4 is getting a lot of attention because it's the first phone to really compete with Apple on that certain je ne sais quoi that Apple products have and others just don't. Marketplace's Queena Kim reports.
You can't do a story about the contender without mentioning the champ. Here's Steve Jobs introducing the first iPhone in 2007.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
The iPhone did change everything. Now fast forward to 2013 and this Samsung Galaxy commercial. It's set in front of an Apple store and a line of fans are waiting for the new iPhone.
The headphone jack is going to be on the bottom.
I heard the connector is all digital.
What?
What does that even mean?
Who knows?
Americus Reed is a marketing professor at Wharton. He says the commercial illustrates what might be a tipping point in Apple brand loyalty.
You've seen this flip where Apple as a brand has gone from, oh, well, that's the unique think differently brand, to the iPhone user as being this mindless person in the herd.
Steve Jobs famously said that customers don't know what they want until we've shown them. But some Apple fans are wondering if that business model is a little outdated. Andrew Lee has an iPhone, but he's thinking of making the switch to Galaxy for the bigger screen.
It kind of comes down to old eyes. The more I use my iPhone, the more I realize I'm squinting.
Apple believes a smartphone should fit comfortably in your hand. But Lee says that ignores the way people are using smartphones these days. It's not so much a phone, but a way to check Twitter, take pics, post to Facebook. And if Apple doesn't get hip to that, he's turning to Galaxy, a brand that is. In San Francisco, I'm Queena Kim for Marketplace.
There was a close vote today in Bangkok, Thailand at the CITES Conservation Conference. Pro-shark fishing nations led by Japan and China lost an effort to block trade regulations on three endangered shark species. The BBC's environment correspondent Matt McGrath is at the conference, and he is with us now from Bangkok. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, so what's at stake economically for China and Japan? Why were they opposed to this?
Many people think this is just about sharks and shark finning, and there's certainly some truth in that. I think the deeper issue going on here is that China and Japan are very worried about an organization, an international organization like CITES, having control of fish that are commercially valuable. They're very concerned about that in the longer term, and with good reason. This is the first time that CITES has managed to take over one of these areas, and it won't be the last.
Well, how big is the industry? I mean, what kind of money is at stake here?
The species that were sighted here, that were regulated here, including hammerheads, they account for maybe 6 or 7% of the shark finning market. Not a whole pile, but it is a foot in the door, if you like. It's the first step. They start with these species. These are critically endangered species. They want to move on to the others. China and Japan see this as very much the foot in the door, and they see that it'll lead to regulations on loads of other species, which are much more valuable.
Well, so is it fair to say that what's bad news for China and Japan is good news for the sharks?
Absolutely. I mean, it's fantastic news for these particular three species. They're talking about the oceanic white tip, which is extremely endangered. Numbers have gone down by 90% in most parts of the world. The hammerheads, they're hugely valued in the fin soup trade, and they've gone down by around similar percentages. So you're talking about species that have been really clinging on here and been getting a really real hammering. They're hopeful now that these species will be regulated and that the numbers will start to grow again, because under CITES, it doesn't mean you can't stop fishing them, but it means that every time you catch one, you've got to have a regulation, have a permit to export it to a country that wants to buy it. They have to have a permit to import it.
Those hammerheads are really amazing. They just look like nothing else I've ever seen.
Oh, they're absolutely creatures from an alien world, and people absolutely love them. I mean, it's amazing the human interaction with sharks. You know, we're a little bit scared of them, a little bit respectful, and, you know, people, on the other hand, have been eating them for millions of years, and suddenly, you know, we're getting to the stage where they're in such dire straits, and people seem here to make that kind of coalition to say, look, we think sharks are an important species that need to be saved. Never mind just the trade, we need to save them, and that's what they've done.
The BBC's environment correspondent, Matt McGrath, at the CITES conference in Bangkok, Thailand. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And finally, there are certain things that we all have to do that just never seem to get easier. And one of them, for me, is folding a fitted sheet. Well, yesterday I saw a video on my Facebook page that somebody had posted of a lady with a perfect explanation of how to do it. And we have just put it up on the Marketplace Facebook page and at marketplace.org. It will change your life, especially if you, like me, didn't know how to fold a fitted sheet before. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from 8 p.m. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.